In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. We take a look at another case of organized stalking and covert microwave radar attacks and torture. In 1982, Karen Melton Stewart was hired as a foreign language intelligence analyst with the National Security Agency. However, after nearly three decades, she was wrongly terminated for questioning why another woman was credited and promoted for her work. Specifically, it was a project that ended up saving many lives in Operation Iraqi Freedom. Karen Stewart had followed up with a lawsuit against the NSA through the Baltimore Equal Opportunity Commission, but her case was oddly dismissed without a hearing. Since then, she has sustained criminal and vicious harassment at what she describes is through the NSA's direction, and specifically, the Department of Homeland Security subordinates working out of the fusion centers. Karen Stewart publicly shares her story, giving legitimacy to the many thousands silently suffering from microwave attacks and harassment. Despite misdirection in the corporate-owned press, the biological injury from microwave weapon attacks have been confirmed against U.S. diplomats in Cuba and China. Karen is retired and happily married. Karen joins us today to talk more about the details of her career in the NSA, organized stalking, and the microwave weaponry used to torture victims. Karen Stewart, welcome to Another News.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Karen, on this show, we've had more than 30 victims of organized stalking on as guests to talk about their cases. Their backgrounds and lifestyles range from activists to psychic empaths to a civil engineer, and they're mostly women. Would you please give listeners an overview of how you became a target of organized stalking as a 28-year veteran intelligence analyst within the National Security Agency?
Yes, I would be glad to, because some of the victims are whistleblowers. I worked there, as you said, for 28 years and discovered that after a huge project that I was the main author of, that my boss had given credit for my work to another woman, and she had gotten a double promotion meant for me. So when I asked the inspector general to please look into it, because I was told this by a promotion board member, and I asked the inspector general, George Ellard, to look into it to see if that was true, because I didn't know. Just because somebody makes an allegation doesn't make it true. And when I did that, I suddenly became the target of a mystery investigation, as if I had done something wrong. And that was purposeful. That was to make people mistrust me and to turn the tables on me. This continued for about 3 years, and it turned into not only NSA security, low-level security people stalking me all around NSA. You know, like if I went to the bathroom, for Pete's sake, they would station somebody outside the ladies' room. If I went to another office, they would send somebody standing in the hall waiting for me to leave, they'd send them along with me just to follow me. So it became rather irritating and certainly intrusive. And then I noticed that people began to treat me badly or to shun me. And I had one friend who called up and said, Karen, you know, every 5 to 7 years there are reinvestigation interviews of people that you know or I know or whatever, just to make sure that we haven't turned into alcoholics or done something stupid. I said, yes. And he said, well, I just had the most bizarre reinvestigation interview that I've ever partaken in, and it was about you. And I said, how so? He said, well, this man from security was trying to get me to say that you were this or that. And he wouldn't tell me. He said, I'm not going to tell you because it'll make you furious. And he said, we almost got into a fist fight because he wanted me to say things about you that I knew, having worked with you for several years, couldn't possibly be true. He said, so I wanted to call you up and warn you, something's going on and I don't know what it is. And he knew that my work had been stolen and accredited to another person because he worked on the same project. And so, you know, that was very definitely alerting me to this. And these people took the stalking harassment off NSA campus and they were having people stalk and harass me to and from work and going into stores. They would follow me around stores as if I were a shoplifter or something, which I've never been. And they were NSA security people because every so often the dingbats would forget to take off their NSA security badges. So we got to a point in early 2009 where they were doing coordinated aggressive driving attacks on me in between my home and NSA, and almost putting me in car accidents, which would have not only hurt me, but anybody around me. They would surround you and make sure that they controlled how fast you went. And if you decided you needed to go to another lane, they'd quickly speed up and make sure you couldn't get into that lane and missed your turn. It was things like that, you know, and doing brake, you know, stomping on their brakes and things like that, swerving into you. Or making you think they were going to swerve into you, hoping that you would swerve and hit the other car, and it would be your fault. That's what was going on. And they also poisoned a family pet to death. And at that point, when they're endangering my life and had killed a pet, you know, I went to my supervisors and said, look, these people are pretending to have some kind of investigation of me. I've done not a damn thing wrong. And I said, what I did was I reported somebody who did something pretty darn wrong. You know, stealing somebody's work credit and stealing their promotions. And I said, you know, this needs to stop because this is just absolutely ridiculous, you know. And they had been apparently threatened and told that if I said anything at all, they were to report me. And as soon as they reported me, then they stripped me of my clearance, put me in a menial job and said, oh, you're paranoid and delusional because you think people have stolen your work and your promotion and you think people are stalking and harassing you. You know, they didn't do any kind of investigation. I said, look, I have license plates, I have makes and models of cars, and I have images of people who are doing it. So I do have something to investigate. And so we don't need to investigate.
Oh, that's really interesting. I just want to go back for a minute to your report. And from what I understand in previous interviews that you've done, this report actually saved many lives. And if your name was on it and other people knew about it, it seems to me that it would be pretty easy for you to have the proof that you're the author of this report. Why wasn't that easy to do?
Because they would ignore it. I mean, I can't even tell you how many reports that I wrote, because I wrote reports starting from June of 2002 into, I think the last one I wrote was January 2003, and it had to do with the invasion of Iraq, Russia, and I'm not telling you anything that's not been in the newspapers. So Russia had been selling jammers to the Iraqis under the table that affected our missiles. And we didn't know about it until I did research and found out about it. So I wrote, I don't even know how many reports that basically told them, you know, who was selling it, what the dimensions, what the capabilities of these devices were, how many they were selling to Iraq, how they were getting them there, you know, via what countries, you know, by truck, by helicopter, however. So I wrote, I don't even know how many reports, but that engendered a team that went out and took the information and created jammers on their own to see, is this an efficient jammer? And they found out, oh, by golly, it was. And so that worried everybody. And before the invasion, they actually had taken measures to destroy the jammers. And by the time that we invaded in January 2003, there might have been two or three left, which they quickly took care of. But the newspapers reported that some of our missiles had actually gone astray. And that's why, because they still had two or three jammers actually working. So the Pentagon told NSA management, upper management, that the reports had actually, in their estimation, saved about 2,000 American military lives during the invasion. So I think, too, that that's what made the work so attractive for my upper echelon boss to steal it and have my name taken off the reports and another woman's name put on them, because they were talking about this was such a good piece of work that they wanted to promote me for it. And this woman that he wanted to promote had been sleeping her way through the weapons and space management and wanted reward.
Oh, okay. That's what I was wondering about. What made this woman eligible at that level to really be involved with such a diabolical scheme to steal somebody's work and be okay with it? That now I can see the dynamics. talking...
I think she was a honeypot for either the deep state or a foreign entity.
Oh, okay. So we're getting into what Jeffrey Epstein might have been involved with. Not saying he was involved, but it is on that level probably.
Yes, I think so. And like I said, in early 2009, I went to my branch chief and branch deputy, who had been very nice to me for quite some time, until after the first of the year. Then they were acting rather peculiar. And like I said, when I went to them and I said, look, this is enough. There obviously is nothing going on. I've done nothing wrong, or they could have found it certainly in 3 years. You know, it's only harassment at this point. And I said, it needs to stop. And so when they reported me, I was told to report to security. Security said, oh, you're paranoid, delusional, crazy. You can't have any type of clearance. So we're stripping you of your clearance, and we're going to send you to the travel office, which is another building in which you don't need any type of clearance. And it was very menial work. You just basically said, you know, Jim Smith went over here to San Antonio, and his trip cost X amount of dollars, and we reimburse it. It just was very incredibly menial. But when I started parking in their parking lot, which was across from the separate security entity, I started seeing the people who reporting to work at security who had been stalking and harassing me. So I gathered some license plates, makes and models of cars, went to the police, and the police got back to me and said that initially they would investigate, and then they got back to me and said, well, NSA has forbidden us to investigate. And at that point, NSA panicked and said, okay, you're on administrative leave. We can't have you on the campus because you're just crazy and dangerous, you know. And I thought, okay, that's interesting. So they transitioned from people who are obviously NSA security, who looked like they were ex-military, maybe got out at 25, 26, 27, and still had the military haircuts. They transitioned from low-level security to civilians. And I thought, what in the world? Because the first week I was home, it was very quiet, but then I noticed that civilians seemed to be stealing my mail. So I thought, what in the world is going on? Well, I investigated and found out that what NSA had done, and this goes to other agencies too. NSA went to the Fusion Center that's nearby, and I'll give you a little bit of background. If you don't know what a Fusion Center is, after 9/11, NSA lied to the Congress and said, well, we couldn't stop at 9/11 because we just didn't have the capacity to share information with low-level law enforcement and other agencies. So we need to make fusion centers. So they have made now, there are about 80 fusion centers all over the United States, and they sit there and they have representatives from FBI, NSA, DEA, and all kinds of federal agencies, but they also interact with law enforcement, police departments, fire departments, sheriff's departments, et cetera, to keep an eye on what they think might be a threat in that area. But what they're doing in actuality is they're taking out contracts on people. They are saying, oh, this whistleblower could be a problem. Let's report them as a terrorist. And then we'll have these civilians that the fusion centers hire, InfraGuard and other such names, who are paid under the table tax dollars and gift cards and services, you know, or they're paid with season tickets to some football team games. We're gonna pay people to harass whistleblowers, and we're gonna destroy them. We're gonna absolutely destroy whistleblowers and make sure that they don't ever think it's a good idea to tell on us. And they're going to, and we're going to also put contracts out on journalists who write stories that we don't like. And any other person that we find an irritant or somebody we wish to destroy politically. Of course, that's not the only reason. They actually are hot into human trafficking. So they have partnered with all kinds of corporations and medical laboratories and things like that. And it would appear that these partners will come to them and say, hey, we have, you know, we're a, let's say we're Raytheon. We have this new directed energy weapon we want to test out on people. Can you declare about 100 people in your area to be terrorists so that they can be stripped secretly of their constitutional rights, their human rights, their civil rights, and we can get people hitting them with these weapons from, you know, nearby, and they, you know, what are they going to say? They're getting hit with electrical weapons that most people don't know exist. So we're going to put it out there that anybody reports something like that, It's just mass delusion. Just ignore them. Don't let them file police reports because it's a waste of time.
Is this a speculation on your behalf, or do you really know that this is the way it operates?
Well, we're having people talk about being hit with certain types of weapons, comparing notes, and then we're seeing in some cases, not all cases, Raytheon or General Dynamics or somebody come out with a weapon that, by golly, does something that's very, very similar. So we're putting the pieces together. The documentation is very difficult to get because they are guarding it with their lives, but we're able to piece some of it together when they come out and announce, we have this fantastic, wonderful new directed energy weapon, and it's been what people what the victims have been talking about for quite some time. You know, there's one that we discovered, if they hit you in your house with it, it'll make you ill immediately. It'll make you throw up. We've compared notes on that and found that it was a Lily wave, and you actually have to leave your house to get away from the wave and not be sick anymore. It's basically connecting with a lot of people and comparing notes and comparing research that a lot of people have done to show that these are absolutely, definitely weapons, that the directed energy weapons actually have been being produced for 60-plus years, but they have been kept secret for several decades, and they're just now coming out and saying, hey, we have these, they're really wonderful stuff. People are saying, oh my God, that's what I was hit with for like 6 months. And that does exactly what happened to me. So if we could get police or somebody who has the expertise to investigate, I think we really could prove it. You know, but they're halfway, they don't know whether to keep bragging about their capabilities or keep denying that this even exists. So it becomes very problematic.
A past guest, attorney Jerry Lephart, Dr. Judy Wood's attorney, he brought a KTEM case against the federal government regarding the NIST report that concluded fire-melted steel. And they had found that there was a company involved making directed energy weapons, and that was Applied Research Associates, one of a number of companies involved. I'm wondering if they make those as well, or they make maybe portable ones. It's been around for quite a while, and I guess they can scale it up to larger weaponry. A past guest, Helena Chorba, had mentioned that there was something called dielectric permittivity that could dial in specific substances that a radio wave would be able to evaluate, whether it's solid, liquid, or gaseous. This weapon could dial in a specific organ in the body or subtract a foil helmet that somebody's wearing and go directly to the brain. Are you familiar with any of that material?
Some of it. I will say that I have read and seen indications that Raytheon has something called the Raven's Claw. And they, depending on the frequency, can dial in and attack any organ in your body, because the kidneys will have their own frequency, the stomach will have its own frequency, your brain will have a different frequency, and they can dial that in and attack somebody's kidney or aorta or, you know, things like that, which is horrifically alarming. And then I spoke into her a little bit, and she says, yes, some of these weapons can, you know, they hit you with it and say, oh, this person is surrounding themselves with Reflectix, which is a attic insulation, or they're surrounding themselves with something else, so we'll just dial this in and bypass it and hit that person. So I always recommend to people that they use multiple layers of different types of materials to make it harder to hit them. And these people love to hit us in our sleep because they are going for that kill. What it looks like is that they basically load the terrorist watch list with as many people as possible, generally, just to get the money from the state and federal entities. Say, look, we've got a whole bunch of people in this area, very dangerous, and so we need to double our workload and we need to double our salaries. You know, I mean, it's just a scam. Judge Trenga, I think it's the 6th District in Virginia, a few months ago declared the watch list absolutely, totally unconstitutional, which, of course, anybody with common sense would know, because what they do is they fabricate false dossiers against you, on order, set people out to stalk and harass you. And I found evidence that they go to the local police or sheriff's department and say, look, Jim Smith is on our list of you can't help him. So if he ever comes here for help, you just ignore him. You put him down as a nutcase. I went to the Tallahassee Leon County Sheriff's Department to speak with them about attacks that were not only affecting me, but they were affecting my quite elderly parents who I was visiting and staying with for a few months. And the duty officer said, what is your name again? And so I told him, and he said, okay, come with me. And he walked out to the parking lot to his own private car, and he opened up the trunk, and he took out maybe about 12 to 20 folders. And he checked the spelling of my name, found my folder, opened it up, and said, yeah, I'm not allowed to help you, and put them back in the trunk. Well, why in the world were folders of certain people in the private car of the duty officer? Well, what they did was every time they switched duty officers, they switched the folders to that person's car. And then if somebody came in and said, you know, gave them a description of certain types of things like stalking harassment, electronic harassment, et cetera, they would go out, check the trunk to see if this is one of the people the Fusion Center had told them they were not allowed to help.
If listeners are wondering why this is important, a large part of it is because whistleblowers are targeted on this level, and we wonder why things aren't getting done. It's business as usual for the corrupt people in our federal agencies, state agencies. Well, this is one of the reasons, is because the people are being targeted. Those people who are trying to make change are being severely targeted by organized stalking, and specifically the microwave attacks. And those can be really deadly to some people, and in essence, torture. Karen, it's not easy to imagine that someone would actually do this to another person. You were hit with them as well. And could you talk about how you sustained injury from directed energy microwave weapons?
Yes, I am one of, I don't even know how many. We estimate there may be 2 to 3 million inside the United States are being targeted in various ways, most of them with organized stalking and with directed energy weapons, though some of them actually are being hit with poisons and gases in their own homes. So it depends on the program that they put you in and how they want to human traffic you. I was in Florida. Again, my parents were very elderly. My mother had taken a fall and needed to be able to have somebody take care of them while she was in rehab. And so I went down there, and it turned out that I was there for about 2 years. During the first year, my lawyer, because I had sued NSA for wrongful termination, my lawyer had asked for subpoena power to get the identity of one of the upper echelon managers who was participating in my harassment. And NSA's reaction to that was not only to forbid the EEOC, which is Equal Employment Opportunity Commission judge, to issue a subpoena, which is illegal, but they went to the Fusion Center in Florida, where I was visiting, because I was living in Maryland. They went to the Fusion Center and said, look, we want you to portray her to the neighborhood and to the town and to all the people who basically work for you, the civilian mercenaries that you employ secretly. We want you to portray her as a traitor and or pedophile. So I actually heard that from one neighbor telling another neighbor that I was a pedophile. I never in my life have been, nor would I. So I was rather shocked. And then I heard that from somebody else on the internet, that they were told by NSA to spread it around that I was a pedophile.
I'm glad to hear that you actually, somebody told you that this is what they heard, instead of continuing the gossip. And that is so vital. That is so important. Was there any indication or anything specific that you might recall that prompted these people in your neighborhood to let you know that this was going on?
Well, one of them said it accidentally where she thought I couldn't hear it. And so I overheard it. And the people she told had just moved into the neighborhood, just bought a house. They had children. And they resold the house and left. So this woman's lie cost these people several thousand dollars, I'm sure. Another woman told me she was a friend on Twitter. And then she told me, she said, Karen, I just got a message from somebody who said, don't be friends with Karen on Twitter. And she said, why on earth not? She said, well, I was told by NSA that she's a pedophile. And so I said, are you kidding me? So she agreed to write a letter to my lawyer so that we could put it in the case. Because she said, Karen, I've, you know, I mean, even though it's Twitter, I've known you, I see what your opinions are. She said, I don't think this is possible. I said, you're right, it's not. So they go, and I did see when my lawyer sent off the subpoena, I started to see activity around the neighborhood where people with, like two people with badges would go house to house to house. And they skipped our house. And where they went in, several of those people seemed to be participating in the harassment. And those are the people who got the directed energy weapons eventually. So they were basically told, this is a bad person and we need to kill her. And in so doing, they were harming my parents. And I will let you know that the first few weeks that they did it at night from midnight to about dawn. And they would go, they had contractors who first did it until they got people in the neighborhood to agree to do it from their homes. And they would run into the woods in the evening and then come get picked up in the morning when just as dawn was breaking. And we would be hit with horrific electronic emanations throughout the night, so bad that it would make you shiver, so bad that it took the microwave, the clock, and the timer and everything. It destroyed it. The refrigerator and the washing machine were affected, and my iPhone and a router were destroyed. They were fried. So after several weeks and months of this, I started to get health effects. And I had, when this started to happen, I said, okay, I can't have my parents subjected to this. So I started sleeping in the laundry room away from them so that they didn't get hit as hard. And so I started to develop heart damage and bleeding in the brain. I had a blood clot that went down my throat at one point, and they could tell that I had bleeding in the brain, yet I had no outside damage. So how does that work? I also had scarred retinas, vision damage. Now, how does that work? So all of it was appearing at once, and there are some other things, but you just don't go your entire life having no health problems, because at that point I was in my 50s, and my parents were, you know, late 80s, early 90s, so we have extraordinarily good genes. I mean, the joke in the family is that we live forever unless we're hit by a bus. They started having some heart difficulties just when I did. So how do you develop heart problems in the very same year that your elderly parents do? And they both develop at the same time, and you're 26, 27 years younger, and you develop that at the same time.
I'm really sorry to hear that you've suffered this. And about what year was this happening?
They basically started hitting us late 2015 into 2016. So that's when most of the damage showed up. It just kept coming. I said, I can't believe it, because I almost never went to the doctor. I had no reason to. I got maybe a migraine once a year. But like I said, I would describe myself at that point in my life, I would say I'm disgustingly healthy. But now I've got multiple permanent problems.
These problems are directly related to being exposed to microwave-directed energy?
Very likely. I mean, the fact that it would all be coincidence is a billion to one. What I describe has been described in literature for various types of weapons as being one of the effects. So the fact that you would go 50-something years with perfect health and then suddenly develop multiple bizarre and unique health problems is next to impossible without outside interference. And something that would cause bleeding in the brain but no outside damage would indeed be microwave. That would be one of the injuries that microwaves can and have caused. Now, there was a NSA agent named Mike Beck, who I think in the 1990s, he and another NSA agent went to a foreign country, and they haven't identified which country, but it was a hostile country, and they were rooming together in a hotel, and they both got hit with severe microwave weapons. Well, both of them developed Parkinson's disease, and the other man died, and Michael Beck was forced to quit working in his 40s because he was so severely disabled. Now, if you look into the stories about the diplomats who were in China and Cuba when they too were attacked by mystery weapons, They called them sonic weapons at first, but then there are some neurologists who came out and said, no, these are directed energy weapons. We recognize it as being microwave-induced illnesses and permanent damage, permanent eye damage, permanent hearing damage. You can actually be sunburned by radio frequency weapons. So there are various types of weapons. And I know a woman in Arizona who's gotten third-degree burns laying in her bed at night being hit with these weapons. So these weapons go from war size, the ability to basically fry everybody in a town or city, to being specifically aimed at a person with a certain frequency and certain DNA. So they have gone from huge weapons of war down to anti-personnel assassination size in the last few decades.
Helena Chorba was mentioning how the U.S. diplomats who were at the Chinese and Cuban embassies, I think she said that the doctors described the injury as the brain hitting against the skull causing bleeding. This weaponry, from what I understand in your write-ups on at the Activist Post, is miniaturized. And would you tell listeners more about that?
Well, they have been miniaturized. They can be as small as something that fits in your hand. I've seen a microwave device that could fit into your hand. And they can be in purses and bags. And they can be actually attached to the engine of a car so that they come up behind you and fry you. There are other devices, like if they're harassing you on the street or as you drive, they will have several cars that will surround you, and they try to make sure that they get somebody ahead of you that has one of these devices on a battery pack in their trunk and hit you with it.
In a more diabolical area, several of the guests on the show have described how they were remotely raped. And past guest Helena Chorba detailed how a computer interface can program microwave energy, and it could commit this act. Has this also happened to you, and what have you found in your research in regard to this despicable crime?
It has not. I seem to be on a assassination program where they just want me to get cancer and die, or just die of bleeding in the brain if they hit me particularly hard. But I have read about it, and I suspect that the fact that they do try to get nano into you, I think that has to do with how they can do that, how they can affect nano in certain parts of someone's body. The first thing that they do, I think, from my experience and from other people's experience, is that they get a GPS chip into you so they know exactly where you are at all times, and they can locate you within two inches of where you're standing. The second thing they seem to want to be able to do is get nanoparticles in you so that if you are standing in a crowd of people and they hit the crowd with a subtle strength of a directed energy weapon, you're going to be miserable, but the other people aren't immediately going to be miserable. I mean, I've had people in the house with me where I'm feeling it and not feeling well, and within an hour or two, one or two of the people I'm with might get a headache because they don't have the nano inside to catch and reflect the energy back into them, because the people without it, it just passes through them. Even though it does have a deleterious effect, it takes longer for them to feel it, and it takes longer for them to be harmed by it. So this is very specifically target-driven. And they can actually also hone in on you by your brain frequency, because everybody has a unique brain frequency, just like they have a unique fingerprint. Now, when I was in Florida and they were hitting the house, my father and I look more alike than my mother and I, and we have more physical things in common. So he would actually get sick, and he would ask my mother to drive him out and away from the house for a while because he couldn't stand it. And it wasn't that he was exactly my DNA, but he was so darn close that it was affecting him very badly. There was a lady that I'd known for, she's my best friend, 40 years, and whenever I would go to visit her, within half an hour, they had people surrounding the house subtly and hitting the house, her house, with these directed energy weapons in their cars, and she would start to get ill. And other places, the people were unaffected, but I said, okay, well, we must have some things in common, like a similar brain frequency or something like that. So it is interesting, even though it's horrendous, the way that this works. So you can see how they can target somebody for assassination. you know, and most of the people in the room won't have any idea anything happened, and then that person's dead. You know, they've got bleeding in the brain, they've had an aneurysm, a stroke or something, and nobody's the wiser. They think it's a natural occurrence, and it is not. I mean, I think Justice Scalia was murdered. That's what it sounds like to me. And probably there have been other people murdered like that.
Especially if someone may be, I don't know, not very healthy, and it's easy to conclude that it was under natural circumstance. The late actor and comedian Dick Gregory mentioned in an interview pre-September 11, 2001, that an individual's brain patterns can be read remotely. And in fact, he said that he was monitored that way. So you just mentioned that your brain wave patterns can be a specific signature for any kind of device to latch onto. I thought that was pretty outlandish back when I heard it, but that was, you know, quite a while ago.
They've been studying this in secret for a very, very long time, and they have pretty much mastered almost any or all frequencies. I mean, you think the fact that they know what frequency, if they hit your home with it, they know what frequency that can make you severely depressed to the point of suicide. They can hit a crowd of people who are out peacefully protesting, and maybe they don't like what it is that they're protesting, so they hit them with a frequency that severely agitates them, and the people become violent and angry, and they don't even know why. So they totally discredit that group and their cause.
Well, that's starting to explain a few things. You've written about how civilians are recruited to wield microwave energy weapons against people. Can you talk a little bit more about that for our listeners?
Well, it would appear that the fusion centers decide that they have a target within a certain neighborhood. So they send out someone from the fusion center or perhaps InfraGuard. And InfraGuard is a highly organized group of civilians who work for the fusion centers, but they usually try to claim that they're volunteers, but they're not. They're getting paid under the table with gift cards, and I'm saying that because I've talked to them, and they have confirmed it. Okay, we'll get back to that. But what you see is that the fusion centers, they blanket a neighborhood, and what they do, it would appear, is that they say, hey, John Smith over here, he's a really bad guy, but we don't quite have enough legally to arrest him and charge him with anything, but we got to stop him. It's your duty as a human being and a patriot. You got to help us stop him. And of course, the person's like, sure, what can I do? And they don't question, why don't you have evidence? Why can't you charge him? Why can't you arrest him? You know, they just say, well, we can't. You know, it's just, he's too clever. So, you know, in the name of social justice, we'll be giving you some devices that will hinder and hopefully maybe even kill him. And we'll just get rid of this problem. Or if it doesn't, then we'll drive him from the neighborhood and you won't have this problem. Of course, John Smith has no idea any of this is going on because he's never told he's being accused of being a traitor or being a terrorist or being a pedophile. He's never told, you know, and this is totally against the Constitution. But they hate and fear monger throughout the neighborhood. And then they seal the deal by saying, oh, by the way, you know, if you take this device into your house, you're next door, you're line of sight. Hold this on him, turn it on, and keep it on him, and we'll give you $1,000 a week. Easy money, under the table. You don't have to report it as taxes. So even if people were uneasy, as soon as they get a huge amount of money waved in their faces, they're all in. Because they're told, hey, you know, we're the fusion center, we're law enforcement, nothing can happen to you. You're doing this under our auspices. It's not a crime if we tell you to do it.
And then there's another level, Karen, who are aware of the crime that they're committing and agree to do it. And they're more on the criminal level. Can you talk more about that?
Yes, they do actually employ criminals. I'll give you the example in Florida when I started being stalked and harassed 24/7. And this was before they were hitting me with the energy weapons. But all through 2015, I was being stalked and harassed by people who had decent cars, you know, Toyotas and even Lexus and some of these other cars that showed they were accomplished people. You know, they were upper middle class. And at that point in time, I started giving interviews, you know, and a lady named Cher Zeev actually wrote two articles. One I gave to her anonymously to tell her about this program. And then the second one, I said, well, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and say my name and stand behind what I'm saying. So she wrote a second article. And when I found myself being stalked and harassed, at least one of these articles had a very short link that I actually could put on the back of my car using letters from, you know, Home Depot. So I put a link on the back of my car, and these people had been told, you know, to follow me around everywhere, you know, multiple cars all the time. And whenever they would get behind me and I'd stop at a, you know, let's say a red light, they'd get curious as to what that link led to. And the link led to the fact that I was saying that NSA and all these other agencies were corrupt, corrupt, corrupt. The fusion centers were corrupt, and the watch list was a scam. So I witnessed several people who sat behind me during a red light look up this link, and then I would see them either shake their head, roll their eyes, do something that indicated to me that they were extremely disgusted with what they had been told to do and why. And I would notice many of them would turn around and leave. So I started to disrupt the InfraGuard, who thought that they were patriots and doing something. And then I noticed that the cars that were following me 24/7 became very bad cars. They were very old cars. They were not in good condition. They had lost the people who had any kind of education and were basically tapping into the people who were janitors or just didn't have jobs or welfare recipients or were actually crooks. You know, so they had lost the story, and they went down a layer to people who knew they were hurting people and didn't care. They went to criminals. And we have speculated that not only do they get money, you know, like the other people did, but they probably were given drugs, or they were given deals to get them out of jail early or reduce some kind of fine or, you know, reduce a sentence or something. So they utilize everybody they can. And we think, too, that they get the criminals to commit the heinous criminal acts, you know, like murdering a pet or vandalizing your home or your car, as where the guy who's a CPA is not going to do that, but he will follow you around. You know, but he's not going to go slit your tires. They use proxies to keep themselves up and away from the crimes that they induce people to commit.
Three states have outlawed microwave energy weapons, directed energy weapons. They are Michigan, Maine, and Minnesota. The United Nations has specific laws regarding these weapons. Are the laws and policies prohibiting the use of these weapons strong enough to protect the public in those states?
I would say no, because they don't know how to enforce them. In order to arrest somebody for using a directed energy weapon, you have to prove he has it. And in order to prove he has it, you have to have a piece of technology, a meter, that not only shows that it's being used, but where is the source? And it's very difficult to source it. Again, you need equipment that is extraordinarily expensive. So these police are told that it's illegal, but they have no way to prove that it's happening or who's doing it. I mean, you can stand with some of the cheaper meters, you can stand inside somebody's house and you can see the meter is absolutely going crazy, but you don't know who's doing it. And it seems to be difficult to get a search warrant for somebody who's line of sight, you know, because that's the normal protocol, is that to hit somebody, you have to be in a home or a trailer or apartment or whatever that's line of sight. You have to be next door. You have to be on top. You have to be underneath, you know, but the law hasn't caught up with the crime. So they're stymied in being able to apply any kind of law that comes along. So it's a nice start, but it does very little.
Karen, the corporate-owned press has ignored or covered this topic in a way that portrays victims as psychologically impaired. Past guest Josephine Grace has pointed to the New York Times article, The Sound of Things to Come, as one of the few truthful articles on the subject. What are your thoughts on the corporate-owned press writing about this topic?
Well, they have definitely been threatened. And I do believe that certain mayors, police chiefs, sheriffs, et cetera, are told to get with the program or suffer the consequences. I was talking to several people, and we were comparing how many good old sheriffs that lived in our counties or were very revered by our parents have suddenly died of brain tumors. And we thought, oh, dear God, are these sheriffs? And we knew them to be constitutional sheriffs. And we speculated could these be sheriffs who they came to and said, we need you to do this and this, and they said, no, that's against the Constitution. Did they hit them with directed energy weapons to give them brain tumors, kill them, and put their own people in? Because every single time that we found that happen, the guy who replaced them was all in with the program. And we think they're making money head over fist. You know, not only are they getting toys for their police departments and sheriff's departments, but we think they're making money under the table as well. Because we've found that lawyers and other professionals don't want to talk to you about it. No, I don't want to hear it. You know, or they'll either just totally avoid it and say, I don't want to talk about it. You know, as if they're being listened to and they don't even want you to mention it. Or they're scared or they're making money off of it.
A very deep compromise situation if you're involved. Catherine Austin Fitz, a financial expert, had stated that nearly 50% of Americans are involved as perpetrators in organized stalking programs. Karen, based on your experience as an NSA intelligence analyst, would you talk about how pervasive organized stalking is in the United States, for example?
You know, it is everywhere. Now, my stalking harassment began in Maryland when I was working for the National Security Agency, and that's the first time I saw civilians induced into stalking harassment, and I found out they were being paid and directed by the Fusion Center. Well, when I went to Florida to see about my parents, at that point in time, I wasn't being stalked and harassed, and when the NSA fired me, they ceased the stalking harassment because they were doing it in order to try to get me to talk about it so they could say, oh, you're paranoid delusional, you can't hold a clearance if you're mental, so we're going to fire you. So that was their trick at that point. And then I went to Florida to deal with my parents' situation. Again, like I said, I had my lawyer subpoena something or ask for the right to subpoena something, which made NSA crazy. They went to the Fusion Center, told them all kinds of lies, got the stalking harassment by InfraGuard in Tallahassee started again. And then after about a year when they were losing ground and having to use crooks because I was basically getting the message out they were being lied to, at the end of 2015, they started in on the directed energy weapons. And I had, before that, actually started talking about 9/11 because when I was at NSA, I came back 2 days after 9/11 and ended up hearing another fellow analyst talk about the fact that they had had all the information they needed to save every single person on 9/11, but NSA management had forbidden them to warn people. That was absolutely horrific. So I started talking about that because I said, you know, if you're going to do this to me, I'm going to bring this topic to the fore because nobody's talking about it. So when I started to do that, they started hitting me with the directed energy weapons. They weren't pleased about the subpoena, and they weren't pleased about me talking about 9/11. I think the first few weeks they were hitting me, they actually were trying to kill me, to shut me up about that. But I took to shielding kind of intuitively and survived it, and still I'm surviving it, even though I have damage that is that will be very clear. I mean, what we're doing now is we're comparing notes so that we can say, you know, if you have this, this, and this type of damage, and you have this type of MRI, or you have this type of PET scan, or whatever, and it shows XYZ, then you're being hit with directed energy weapons. There's no question. So we are gathering the unique data as to the damage that these things do. It's been shared with certain neurologists around the country, so they know about it. But as far as the network goes, when I left Florida and came back up to Maryland, it took them probably half an hour to start hitting my home again with the directed energy weapons. That is how vast the network is. I mean, and we've got 80 fusion centers, and those are the epicenters for organizing these networks of people. And the people love it because they feel like they're patriots when they're actually insurgents and traitors, and they're getting money under the table, tax-free. And they can bully someone, be in a group, and feel like they're really, really powerful. And they are, because the police are told to turn a blind eye. So the network is vast. Now, is it 50% of the American public? I hope not. But if you want to extend it into the mayors and the police chiefs and the other people who know about it and keep quiet, she might be right. I hope not, but she might be, because the network is astonishing. They've been building this network for 20-plus years. It's a secret society, basically, that says, we get everything, you get nothing. And we're going to make sure you get nothing, because you're not part of the club.
The population, and specifically in the United States, is under a very sophisticated attack. And those who are selected for organized stalking and become involuntary experimental human subjects by the medical military industrial complex are at the leading edge of a profound sadistic tyranny in how their data points are measured while under total surveillance, harassment, and in pain. Would you please talk about your research and understanding the goals of organized stalking?
Well, the organized stalking, I spoke with Chris Doerr about organized stalking, basically is to trick you into portraying yourself as paranoid delusional and therefore undeserving of help. Because what they want to do is say, oh, this person's crazy. And so police have been told either that this is mass delusion and they need to not waste their time with this person, or they've been told, if you hear this, this is a signal for you to know that this is a targeted individual and you're not able to help them, but they're a very bad person. So if you can, try to turn anything they report against them, because we also would very much like to see them either committed into an insane asylum, which is for profit to the Department of Homeland Security, or we want them put in a for-profit prison, because in either of those two places, we can experiment on them even easier than in their own homes. So they're drawn into this. What else are they doing? I mean, they're basically hitting journalists. They're hitting whistleblowers. They're doing medical experimentation. But what does that entail? What are they doing medically? And I was saying that there have been reports from people that they were in staged car accidents, got to the hospital, had something extra done that they didn't need to be done, and then came home with some very odd things going on. And let's go with Bill Binney. I mean, he basically has found that he has been chipped. He said that starting in the night, when you're just about to go to sleep, those chips were sending horrific pain signals through his body, and that would keep him awake. Now, that is one of the techniques they use. They use sleep deprivation, because that kills you faster. That makes your health go in the toilet much faster. So everybody I've always talked to have said that, yes, the weapon strength intensifies throughout the day to the point that in the night is horrific, and that is to keep you from getting a good night's sleep, and then eventually that destroys your health and you die. So part of this is also eugenics program. They're saying, well, there are too many people in the world, so we're just going to kill off a few while gleaning all the information we can from them concerning how maybe a medical disease works. I mean, because some people have said that they were chipped when they did not consent to it during a plastic surgery, or they went in with a broken leg and then came out with chips that seemed to affect their arms, and so that couldn't possibly be related to the leg. So what they think is that they, once they had them under, they just put whatever chips in them they wanted to, and some of them have reported that they are degenerating as if they had a certain disease when they never have, and it's not in the family, and it's not likely they would get it at that age. So they report being experimented on, being destroyed as if a disease was destroying them, to perhaps get knowledge for the medical company to treat this symptom or this disease or this syndrome better. So they are using healthy people to destroy their health, examine the process, and then charge millions of dollars to people who are born with the problem, or contract it during a disease, or get it from a car accident. So they're using healthy people to destroy, to give them knowledge on how to make a lot of money helping people who are not so healthy. So all of this is just any and all types of human trafficking that you can think of. And certainly one of the aspects not only is, you know, population control, just kill them off, use them, kill them off, but they also are investigating transhumanism. How can we invade a human being and turn him or her into more or less a pleasant robot that we can control?
These are areas that have been explored on this radio show, In Other News, and of course many other outlets as well. Thank you again for being on In Other News and sharing this information, not only relating to your case in which you suffered, but also to the worldwide community of men and women who are also sustaining similar microwave radar attacks. There's a detestable psychopathic scourge dwelling among us, freely operating beyond any standard of ethical boundary, and right now they appear beyond the reach of law enforcement or any type of justice, but with your work and many others, the tide is turning. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for giving us a venue with which we can spread this information, because without people brave enough like you are, this would just stay, preaching to the choir. So thank you very much.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.